here and welcome to the Pack Heavy podcast. Now, this podcast is for anyone who works in the hospitality and food manufacturing industries who use flexible packaging to get their products to market. Featuring interviews with guests who have traveled the path that you're on so that you can learn from their successes and failures and engage in the mindset required to go all in on your vision. I call this mindset the Pack Heavy mentality, and it's primarily driven by deliberate action and extreme organization. You gather market intelligence, put a strong plan in place, organize the appropriate resources, and then confidently test your hypothesis against reality. So if you're ready to pack heavy on your vision, you're in the right place, and I'm excited to have you here. Good morning, and welcome to episode 27. Today, I'm excited to have a good chat with Lana Lucas, founder and owner of Hunter Browns. Founded in summer of 2019, Hunter Browns is an innovative food startup company with their first product being brown butter cubes, which, side note, was nominated for Product of the Year in the BC Food Process Association in 2019 and the 2020 winner of Best Savory Food Product in VanMag. Brown butter is known for its rich hazelnutty taste and aroma that can be tedious and intimidating to make, but is now easily accessible for both home cooks and chefs to use as an ingredient to instantly elevate dishes. I'm excited to have Lana on the show today, not only because I'm looking forward to hearing about her startup story, but because of her stunning packaging, branding, and time spent in the Futurepreneur program. Lana, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. So excited.
Yeah, it's good to have you on. How's your morning been?
Oh, it's been great. I've just, I dropped off the kid to school and then starting the day and stuff.
Yep.
Yeah, it's been good.
How old's your child?
He is six now.
Six. That's awesome. Yeah. Such a fun age.
It is.
We were just saying, so you're based in Richmond and you actually live in Steveston, which is actually like 5 minutes down the road from me.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised that I haven't seen you down at the playground as well.
I know. Well, I try to avoid it because I'm like, oh, I'm so tired sometimes.
Yeah.
But no, we were there last weekend, like the main playground in Steveston.
Yep.
Yeah. But then we also live near a school. So we kind of go there sometimes and we just walk and it's like nice to get out and stuff.
Yep. But what, Homer? Or do you usually get to Homer or?
So ours, the one we are is near is a number one road.
Okay.
I forgot
what, up by the like Seafair, kind of up by the
up in that area. Hunter was supposed to go to that school, but he's in French immersion, so went to another school.
Right.
And then but we do live near a school and he's always like on the monkey bars.
Yeah.
To the point where he gets a blisters. So we need an easy route to go home. So we just go for 5 minutes now and then come back. So
that's awesome. Yeah, so that playground up in Seafair behind the Safeway there. It's like a ninja playground. We get there all the time.
Yeah.
And it's a really good one. And we're so fortunate to be living where we're living because there are playgrounds everywhere. So the kids never get sick of it. Like we just do the rounds.
Yeah, it's so good. And then the one in Terranova with like that crazy one, like the really nice one. Oh, it's so nice.
Isn't
like,
it? Yeah, we're really lucky. Yeah. And we just live around the corner from the Terranova playground as well, which is cool. And there's the hill and we're running around on the grass. Zave, my little boy, can't keep his shoes on. I don't mind it when he's running around on the grass like that, but I'm always sort of, on the lookout for glass and sharp things. But the kids love it.
Yeah, I know. We are great and lucky to be in like Richmond where there's so many playground and French immersion.
Yeah.
Good for kids.
Very good. How long have you been in Richmond for?
I was born here.
Oh, really? You're a local?
Yeah. Like a legit local.
Yeah.
So I was born here. Then we lived in Philippines and we moved when I was 11.
Yeah.
And then I came back at 16 for university. And then I kind of have been here ever since. I lived in North Van for a bit and then came back to Richmond. And then, I've been here for a while.
There's a big Filipino community here in Richmond as well.
There is.
Yeah.
Like, it's weird because it's COVID. I like don't see anyone, but I have cousins here and everything.
Yeah.
So, there is. And like, my brother and family like live a block away. So it's
that's nice. Perfect. Yeah, you're lucky to have family so close. Yeah. We live in the Terranova co-op and in the co-op, we've got four Filipino families and they're not related, but they all are a tight little bunch, like a little community of their own. And the neighbor directly across from us, Val, he makes his own banana ketchup.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he loves it.
Have you tried it?
I have.
Banana ketchup is so good.
It is really good,
I, didn't like it as much growing up, but now I have an appreciation for it. I, look for it, too.
Yeah.
It's so good.
No, it is good. And his kids are gorgeous. Like, one of the benefits, so the podcast listeners that have a bit of a grasp on where I was at during COVID, but I was laid off from my job, and I had 5.5 months off. And so I was outside every day with the kids, just walking around the co-op and going to various playgrounds. So we've got like so many kids running around the co-op, and I got to know all of them and, you know, get to really see their little personalities shine through. And yeah, so the little Filipino kids, they were just gorgeous and the most gentlest kids and the biggest smiles. Like, they have bigger smiles than any other kids I know.
I know, they are so, like, kids in general are so cute. Yeah. No, like, everyone's just happy to get out. It was nice that you had time off and like got to know everyone and stuff though. Like,
It was, I mean, at the time there was a lot of unknowns and you know, getting laid off from the job was difficult at first because we just had no idea what it meant and how long it was going to go on for and so on. But we really took the opportunity to sort of reassess our lives and the direction we wanted to take. And here I am at Foodpack now. I've been here for 7 months and I've never been happier in my career, and I've got the podcast. And so it's all worked out for the better. There's no doubt about it. But yeah, at the time we were just sort of really focused on what we could control and, you know, what was in, exactly that. What was in our control and what we had power over, and the mindset that we could engage in every day to put a smile on our faces and be happy just for the fact that we were together as a family and that we had two healthy little kids and the sun was shining and it was awesome. So it took the made the most of it. And like we just mentioned before, just made our way around all of the playgrounds in Richmond and all of the beaches, and it was cool.
It was nice.
You wouldn't want to be anywhere else.
There are so many like little hidden beaches and like little areas that like I had no idea about, like probably like until COVID, because you had no choice but just explore nearby, right? Near the dike and all that stuff. So it was really cool.
Cool. So you kicked off the business in summer of 2019, is that correct?
Yes, it is. Like, by that I meant like that's when I guess I incorporated, started the whole futurepreneur stuff. So like the idea, of course, comes a little bit earlier for a lot of people. And then, you know, you call it then like the business when you like make a business license or whatever.
So take us back right to the very start when you just had the seed of the idea in your mind and you're like, this is something I want to do. Like, what created that? Where did it come from? And how long ago did that all occur?
Yeah, so I think it was Christmas 2017. Yeah, it's got to be. So it was a Christmas party, and it was in 2017, and you know, Filipino thing. I just moved into a new place, and it's like, it's not like I have the biggest place. I had a bigger place compared to like my previous stuff, but like it didn't matter. It was Christmas. You host the Christmas party, and you know, like I'm sure you can imagine, like I had like, I think we were like 25 people, which is weird saying because now COVID to have 25 people in your house is like, whoa. But back then, I had like 25 people or so in my place, and I was hosting it. I think I had like, the kids are outnumbering us, but probably like 13 of them were kids and stuff. And I don't cook, and I never like claim to cook, but I was in charge of the children's dish for the Christmas party. So everyone brought whatever they brought. And then I always loved this brown butter spaghetti with mezzetto cheese from Old Spaghetti Factory. So I just decided to make that, and I would make it occasionally, but to make it, you have to brown your butter, and like and I was making it in a bigger bowl like for everyone and stuff. So that's kind of like where the idea came from. I made a brown butter spaghetti and everyone loved it, but at the end of the night the brown butter fell to the bottom. So I miscalculated. Usually what happens is like I would make too much brown butter for the spaghetti, and then so it would it would fall to the bottom, if not burn, because it's easy to burn. And so instead of throwing it away, because butter is expensive, I just put it in the fridge and like used it as part of leftovers. And so I made some more spaghetti noodles the next day, and then I microwaved the butter, and then I just like kind of mixed it and add some cheese, and then it was like good as new, or like even better, because I think the flavor settled in together. So from there, I don't know what it was, but I know that it was just me and my son, because I'm a single parent, and usually my mom tries to come for the holidays, but she wasn't there. And so I remember, like, fast forward a couple of days later, and it was Christmas Eve, and New Year's Eve, but for some reason I just felt like we had nothing to do. So we went to Whole Foods, we bought every butter we could, and I just browned all the butter. I don't know what I was trying to accomplish, like whatever the best brown butter is, like what kind of butter that was. But so I just did that. And with all of the butter I was browning, I like didn't know what to do with it. So I put it in ice cube trays. And so I would just take a tablespoon and put it in. And then I had like, I would just use a cube every so often when I like wanted to cook or make mac and cheese, where it asks for 2 tablespoons of butter. So like I would add it. I'm like, oh my God, I feel like a gourmet chef. And then because it does, it's supposed to elevate. So kind of like how vanilla elevates baked goods and stuff. This is supposed to elevate all of the flavors around it.
Yeah.
So it's subtle, but it's there. And so I noticed it was, you know, it really helped me feel like a good cook. So then I thought that if I felt this way, then it might help others. So I was toying with the idea for a while, probably for a good year and summer. And I just kept kind of like getting these different like molds or different, like, should it be a cube? Should it be like in a jar? And then finally, I just decided to take the food service exam, which is like basically to own a food business. You have to take like you have to take an exam, and so you're allowed to own the business. And so I thought that I'll just like study, and if I pass it, then that's a sign. But if I don't, it's okay. So and I passed. So then kind of went gradually there, and then I guess a year or so later, by then I was already applying to Futurepreneur. And I had like my business model or my business plan, and kind of just started from there. So
that's awesome. So it really started because you were using the product yourself. And that's just such a common thread throughout this podcast. And, you know, having a chat with the entrepreneurs that I have been, that the vast majority of them have, you know, created a business or a product out of a necessity for creating something for their own use. And I love to hear that, because it's just, you know, you're proving concept with yourself, and you're able to, you know, work on the recipe and sort of really refine things while you've got an opportunity to do it within sort of a closed environment, you know, like a bit of a sandbox. So one other side note as well. So I worked in the hospitality industry my whole life. And there were quite a few years where I was working as a waiter in an Italian restaurant and multiple restaurants over the years. But the real shift in my cooking came when I was a waiter in the Italian restaurants, and the head chef there had a classical French trained background, even though he was in an Italian restaurant, and he would finish everything with butter. So I started finishing all of my sauces and cooking with butter, and it really did shift. And it's so noticeable. Still cook with a lot of butter today, but I've never browned butter. And then the other thing, you were mentioning the brown butter spaghetti sauce. So my grandmother, on my dad's side, her family all came out from Northern Italy, and with them, they brought across a lot of their culture and their food to the small country town that I grew up in Bendigo. And one of the dishes that my dad would fondly talk about is their garlic butter pasta. So it was a lot of garlic, a lot of butter, and just ran through the pasta, and really simple and basic. And I've recreated that a few times here and shaved a bit of Parmesan cheese on it, and it goes down so easily, and the kids do love it as well. So just those simple basic ingredients are really all you need. So I get why your son and all the kids loved it at the Christmas party.
Like even the adults like that. I'm like, okay, you know, it's for the kids, that's all I can make. I'm like, come on, there's other food for you. But it was so good. And like, I do know that like a rule of thumb that I remember some people have told me, like some kids don't like sauce, like and I didn't know that, but I like even red or white or something, but they'll do butter and spaghetti. And so I didn't know that even that was a thing. I really, like, the first time I heard of it was in Old Spaghetti Factory. And I get it, like, and just with cheese, it goes such a long way.
It does. So Futurepreneur, how did that come onto your radar?
It was because I was looking up getting a patent, actually.
Really?
And so I was like exploring that idea, and I either for the design of it or just like various reasons. I know it's not super popular to make. Not a lot of people know brown butter to begin with, but it's starting to trend, but just the process and some of the other things involved in it. In the end, I met with a patent lawyer, but then it made sense not to get it, actually. So for various reasons, but she was like, oh, you know, like, I do love brown butter. So have you, and I think it's a good idea. Do you need like funding, or like, regardless, I think you should join these and like so-and-so like associations and stuff. So Futurepreneur was one of them. And I just decided to go for it. And the thing about this was like, I try not to overwhelm myself because I already had a business I had like a business. I was self-employed already. So I had a pretty good setup being a single parent. And like, I was working remotely. I've been working remotely for like 9 years now. So, so I had a good setup, and I know it's different if you have a product-based business. Mm-hmm. So I know there's like, whether you like it or not, there's going to be some different expenses as opposed to being like self-employed and just having your laptop. Yeah. So I like kind of thought long and hard, but at the same time tried to not make it as overwhelming. So I gradually just, when I was looking into the patents, I did that. And then she mentioned like a few associations. So I looked into it. And then, so Futurepreneur, I gradually just looked into that as well. And so one of the requirements was, it seemed like I kind of had everything in place. One of the requirements was a business plan. Mm-hmm. And I know right away that that would have been my barrier, like a business, like it could be a lot of people's barrier.
Yeah.
Like just that formal document of like, you know, like it's a lot. It was
thinking everything through. Yeah.
Yeah. There were like mission statements and all these cash flows and all these things. And I was like, oh gosh, okay, no, it's okay. I'm not going to do this business. But if there's one thing I think I am, it's kind of resourceful. So yeah. I had someone help me make it. And then quickly then and there, you find out what you want to put or what you want and what you don't want. I just need someone to start it. And then I was able to finish it. So, so that's how like, but once you do all of that, you kind of like know the ins and outs. Mm-hmm. So that's where I think I became more, quote unquote, committed to starting it. And then thankfully I was like approved, and the people at Futurepreneur are like so great. And like, I'm like friends with one of the girls who still works there, and they've been so good to me. And it just made the whole process all the more easier. And like, I totally like encourage everyone to apply if they could. You just have to be under 40. But
yeah. That's really cool. You are essentially immersing yourself in a brand new industry that you had never sort of delved into, because my understanding is that you've come from the film and TV industry, and you're actually a documentary researcher and copyright clearance coordinator. Mm-hmm. So it kind of worked out quite well for you, because you were able to sort of use that skill set to try and figure out what it is that you needed to do and who you needed to approach, and then you could immerse yourself in it.
Yes. I tell everyone that. Like, I don't think I could do this job of Hunter Brown's if I wasn't a researcher. Mm-hmm. So just because I was like coming out of left field, I didn't know anything. And I'm still learning a lot. Like, I didn't know any product-based business or like having to market yourself or anything like that. I didn't have to do that really for film. But yeah, so I was thankful that I was able to transfer a lot of my skills there. But now I work both jobs.
Yeah, extremely resourceful. And you've also got a bachelor's degree in psychology as well.
Yeah, I do. I'd like to think it all helps me, but I don't know. it's good. Like all the research and reading and then, it all helps.
That'll come in most handy when you get to a point where you've got a few employees working for you and you're basically a psychologist on the side as well.
I know, like, or like marketing. Like I try to like see like, okay, you know, like packaging or not all that stuff, but. Yeah.
Very good. So the idea was sparked. You decided to make it at home. You reached out to, you wrote your business plan.
Yeah.
You reached out to Futurepreneur, and then the wheels started turning. So tell us a little bit about next steps. What point did you start to get the product in front of some potential consumers and test the product with them?
Okay. So that's a little bit different, because I think you mentioned or something like about like product validation and or any market.
Yeah, a bit of product validation and market research.
I didn't really do that. So what happened was I kept it a secret a lot. And not because like, oh, like it's my idea or whatever. Mostly because I wasn't confident about it. When you have nothing like to compare it to, and you have to have a lot of product education, and like I couldn't compare it to normal butter too much, because then people are so used to it and they'll just say, oh, it's butter, whatever. And it's nothing like I could differentiate it like a cookie versus a brownie, you know, like there was just nothing to compare it. So I basically kept it a secret, or like just told my friends and families. The friends and families that I did tell were people who kind of knew what brown butter was to begin with, to think it, to see if it was a good idea. And so I gave them the first like prototypes between the Christmas party and to like kind of to my first, just before I got into retail. I would just give it to friends and family. And then once I started, I knew that because it was something new, a key was that I had to have good photos, especially for food photography and product photos. So because it already looked different, at least if it looked good, then maybe that would be nice. And then I reached out to some like an Instagram, I reached out to some local chefs to see if they thought it was a good idea. Futurepreneur has a great, like, I love my mentor and I still talk to her. And so she helped too with the people that she knew. So she knew like one of, I think it was like the executive chef. Yeah, the executive chef of White Spot. So he was able to like, so I was just lucky to have some of the right connections there.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, it was very select in who I let try it. I didn't do anything super public. And it was partly, because it was new and I didn't need my confidence to be shot down that early on, to be honest. And so I just wanted to know if it was sort of feasible and a good idea and kind of prepare myself for like any sort of like criticism, like, oh, we could make this on our own or something like that, and just kind of build that confidence. But so in terms of market validation and stuff like that, it was very private. And then, but my first taste of it going public was when I joined the product of the year by the BC, they're called like BC Food and Beverage now. And what it is was I applied just to apply, but I really did want to be vetted by a food association, because if I'm not a chef, I'm not even in the industry, and it's like pretty innovative in itself. I thought that if they could vet me and think I have a good idea, then others will. Others will follow and stuff. So I applied just to apply, and then I got shortlisted, which means I got to pitch and present. But I wasn't in retail yet, or I wasn't launched. But I at least was shortlisted, so I got to pitch and they got to try my product, and it got like really good reviews. I didn't make the cut, or I didn't win or anything, but I was like happy like to just be there. But at the same time, it did get me a lot of exposure, because they ended up using my brown butter in the main entree in the gala. And it's like, so my name was on the menu, and I was like, oh, it was like the best feeling ever. And so from there, I used everything as leverage, and I started my Instagram like prior. But every small thing that or a little milestone that we had, like I put it on Instagram, and just made sure to keep it like more as a portfolio as opposed to like trying to get followers. So by the time we did launch, like our first like sale was at the West Coast Christmas show in Abbotsford. So it's like a really big Christmas show, and so we decide to launch there around Christmas time, because I always pictured it good for the holidays, because that's when you're cooking for your family, and that's where I got my start with it or idea. So I like did that, and then it was great, and it was exposure, and people were getting to know it. And then at the same time, I made sure to have a little board to say that we will be in stock at so-and-so in January or something. So it was a combination of things. I launched like in that Christmas show, but I used leverage of the product of the year and other things to and my Instagram to get like, I think it was 7 stores by January. Just so like people have a place to get my product and stuff like that. So yeah, I hope that answered your question.
No, it absolutely does.
It's a little bit all over the place.
No, not at all. I mean, it's such a great story, because as you were suggesting, like having credibility out in the marketplace, especially when you haven't come from the industry, is so critical. And I think the approach of going to, you know, chefs, the really well, you know, well-known chefs to just get their feedback to, you know, while you're working on the product was a really smart idea. Like when you're creating a brown butter, like how is it that you can sort of create it in a way that nobody else is doing it? Like, did you have to tweak the recipe at all based on feedback that you were getting? Or was it basically a standardized sort of recipe that you were like hoping that you get positive feedback on? And if you were looking for negative feedback to utilize as a lever to make adjustments, what kind of feedback was it that you were looking for?
Well, I mean, really, it was more about like the convenience of it.
Right.
What happens with brown butter is that, and why possibly not a lot of people like know it or something is or want to make it, is because it really burns easily. Mm-hmm. So the end result would probably, okay, so basically you stir the butter over a hot pot or pan.
Yeah.
And then very quickly it'll turn brown, and you'll know it's brown because you can sort of smell it, and and you'll see the black like milk solids, and that means, and when it's separated from the butter fat, and that's those milk solids and those brown bits are like the things that make it hazelnutty, and what separates it kind of like from clarified butter or ghee, like because they discard it, we keep it. So but it only takes a few seconds for those brown bits to turn black, mm-hmm. and then burnt. And then you discard everything because it you don't really use it anymore. It's burnt. So you've kind of wasted it. And then if you're going to saute vegetables, you need to have your vegetables right next to you. So it's just a very delicate process. So with ours, we kind of just took away that risk of it burning. But the end result is we are able in our process to extract more milk solids or as much milk solids as we can, mm-hmm. Versus the stovetop method.
Got you.
And we also use really like good butter. So I figured like if people could make it at home, that's great. But we use great butter to begin with. So we just kind of like make sure we're gonna like give really good quality stuff if we're like gonna go at it. So
yeah. Good. Is it salted butter, or do you have to add a little bit of salt?
No, we made it unsalted, purposely, because so it can be as versatile as you want it. Like, so if you want to use it in a savory dish, then you could just use it. And you could put salt if you want to.
Yeah.
But some people who want to bake with it won't need salt or won't want salt in it. So
yes. Cool. Yeah. So tell us a little bit about your production process. So you just touched on it before, but are you working in a commissary kitchen, or where are you working out of?
Early on, I decided to want to go with a co-packer, and we just do with a co-packer who does small runs. Yeah. Yep. And so the reason behind that is because one is because I really do still work in documentaries. So it was going to be hard to juggle both. Mm-hmm. And then I also knew early on that I wanted to be available for food service. So that's a whole different ballgame. It's like less glamorous, but like you better deliver and stuff like that. So, and the volumes are different. So I kind of wanted to set it up in a way where I could be available for food service and retail. So it made sense to try to have a co-packer early on, even if it was like small runs, which I was like lucky able to find someone. But
So I'm assuming that the format between food service and retail is different as well.
Pretty different. So we can like basically because retail it is more glamorous. There's, you know, the packing's different, packaging stuff, and then versus like food service, it's like just in a box and a bag and different volumes, different amounts. But
And are you doing cubes for food service as well, or is it like a big block that they shave off?
That's a good question. We are doing cubes, we're trying to make it in a way where we could do blocks if they wanted to. So there's a little bit of customization needed. So that just requires a little bit more thought and procedure, but
Very good. Tell us a little bit about how you arrived at your price point.
Oh, that is a hard one, but no, not really, actually. I am a big fan, and like you said earlier about being resourceful, I feel like the one thing I have is like a good knack for hiring the right people or getting into business with the right team. I've been really lucky so far. I think it's like kind of what got me as far as I have, or it's what's setting me up to go as far as I want to go. I made the product and I like product tested at home, but again, knowing that I wasn't in food, I didn't want I wanted to make sure I had everything right. So part of my futurepreneur like cost or expense or strategy that I ended up using the funds for, because they give like a loan, is a development team. So for that one SKU, I had a development team. But it was like the best decision I ever made, because they made sure that everything was right with like, for instance, expiration date and everything like that, and all the labs, but also the costing. So the very like the important thing about costing is like, again, knowing I wanted to be in food service and in retail, and it's a little bit different, was to make sure you account for everything. So you have a line for like the brokers and the distributors. It doesn't even matter if you're just going to sell at a farmer's market at first, or you're going to sell at like independent or specialty, or you have no stores and you don't even know. But even if you have like that inkling of idea that you want to be in a retail store in a major chain, or with a, or like in food service or in restaurants, like you have to put the distributor and broker line and
absolutely
for me. Yeah. And the cold storage fee. So I was lucky that, I was lucky early on that I had like the help of a development team make the costing for me. Mm-hmm. Also, like there's a store called Well Seasoned in Langley. And I forgot, because my mentor is like friends with the owner, and I met with her, and she was also like one of the people who I gave the cubes to.
Right.
And yeah, she told me that too. She was like, the thing that people will like might not like is like, you know, you go to a store, you get listed and it's great. Then you bring a distributor on and everything goes up, because now you have to account for it. So I'm like, oh my God, like, I don't want to displease my like retailers. And like, I had no retailers at the time, but like, then it was kind of like a cautionary tale.
Yes.
So it always stuck with me. So costing, I was lucky to get a template from my development team and then like my brokers and everything. But yeah, those were the two things I knew I wanted, to have distributor fees and broker fees, but yeah, I So like I have a team to help me actually. Seems like I'm by myself, but yeah. So costing was thankfully through my team.
And who are you distributing through?
I'm with Dean's Specialty Foods.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Local. Yeah. They're so nice.
Dairy.
And like, yeah, exactly. It was the right fit.
Perfect.
So yeah. And they've been super nice.
Yep.
And they've been like, and I've been like working with some brokers this year. So, but like these brokers they're helping me with like foundations of everything. And they're working with Dean's too. And like sometimes, like in theory, sometimes it could be like, oh, are we stepping on anyone's toes? But everyone like works so great together. Again, I'm so lucky like to work with everyone. But yeah. So,
that's perfect.
The Dean's.
Very good. Yeah, no, I've got a little bit of experience working with Dean's. When I was at my previous place of employment, we did distribute a little bit of our one of our SKUs in particular through Dean's, and it was a great relationship as well.
Yeah, they're so nice. Like they're Sheila and Dean himself, and then the team's so nice. Yeah,
it's great when you can really have a relationship that you not only trust in as well, but where there's chemistry too.
Yeah, for sure. And I'll never forget, because they took me on really quickly, and I know it's not normal to have a distributor this early on. And they like, I'll never forget, like, I think I forgot what the exact issue was, but it was like some newbie kind of issue. So I'm learning from everyone, but Dean was like super nice, like literally walked me through it. I'm like,
that's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly what you want. You want people that are humble enough to be able to hold your hand to some degree and be able to sort of guide you down the path.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're not really being set up for success. So that must be a great feeling for you.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm always the first one to say, like, you guys are the boss. Like, just tell me what you need me to do and I'll try to fulfill my end of the bargain and stuff. And I'm just really learning from everyone. So,
yep. Yeah. Very good. Talk to me a little bit about the evolution of your packaging, your retail packaging. I love it. It's really clean. It captures all of the information that's required. And it's really obvious, like, and once again, there seems to be a common theme on this podcast where I've managed to get on people that have got a really solid and strong brand that they've put a lot of time and energy into. And it's obvious that you've done that too. So tell us a little bit about that story.
Yeah. I know it's so weird. It's so funny. But I think if that was like one of my first business moves, it's actually the branding. Cause if you see me now, I'm wearing all black and stuff. If my website could be black, it'll probably be black. And even so for it to be white is like actually like in a way not me. But I know that like I'm not making it for me, right? Like I'm making it for other people. And so basically what it was is again, futurepreneur. they were so kind that, and they loved my business, like model and everything, that they knew that I would need branding. And I didn't have branding at the time when I applied to Futurepreneur. I had the name.
Did you have the name?
Yeah, I had the name because it was incorporated under a different name, but I had like the DBA as Hunter Browns.
Yeah.
But I didn't actually have the logo yet. It was so, now that I think about it, I'm like, wow, how did I get that far with it? What did the business plan look like?
You can
like?
Go a long way with an idea.
So then I like, but they believed enough in me and they liked it enough that they actually gifted me a design agency.
Great.
And they don't do it often, but it's something like, I guess a few select product-based businesses, they will like have a partner, like design agency help and just get you started. So then I worked with Catalyst Agents, and they are, I think they're in Gastown, and right. They're really great. And so they basically just walked me through it. I would have been so confused, but they said like, it starts from the logo. So like pick mm-hmm. the logo. And then from there, they kind of build on everything else. Mm-hmm. And so like from that, I got my logo, and then they like, they're the ones who built the template or like the first design page of my website too.
Right.
So the packaging though is a little bit different. Once we got the logo, we did the packaging, but it was made at a later date.
Right.
So it was with Dana Liu, who is, I love her. She is the designer for another brand I love, Smart Suites.
Oh, Smart Suites. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
so, I'm sure that all of the listeners are very familiar with Smart Suites. What
exactly.
A great success story. Yeah.
Yeah. And I saw their packaging like back when it was... back when it wasn't the colorful one,
yes,
but it was just I think it was more like white base.
It was a prior evolution. Yeah,
yeah, understood. Yeah, for sure. And I just always liked it. I don't know, there was something, and I like the brand and everything. So I'm like, oh, whoever designed this, I'm gonna get her. And so like, and I remember I got in touch with her again before I was launched, like 2 years, probably in 2019.
Right.
And it just like, I just wanted to know, right? Yeah. Like I just made the reach out, and then fast forward a couple, like I guess a year later. So I was like ready to do the packaging, and I ended up reaching out, and the timing worked. And so she made it, she made the end packaging. But before then, of course, like again, joining product of the year before launching, mm-hmm. I had like the craft bags or the stickers,
yep.
and everything.
Yep.
And yeah, Catalyst Agents, they made a really quick one for me, and then I just had like a couple made, and then and it was great. I loved it. I would have stuck with craft if I could, but I don't know how it came to be. Oh, it was actually Catalyst Agents and I think Dana who were like, they were like, do you really want to stay with craft or can we try this white thing? And I remember like saying like, I think I want to stay with craft, and then they asked again. So I'm like, okay, there's a reason they strongly want this white. And so I'm like, yeah, no, let's go with the white then. So it's like, it's just kind of taking it from the experts. And that's kind of where it started, like for me to not always take what I want, but like, you know, people are experts for a reason. They work in their field for a reason. And then like, I never looked back. It was probably one of the best decisions I made to like make it white because it stands out. And,
it does. Yeah, it's kind of got... I know it's kind of got that masculine feel to the brand.
Yes.
And and yet it's really kind of approachable for everybody. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, and the other thing that I like it as well is, you know, based on the logo alone, it has that kind of 1950s kind of look and appeal to it as well.
Yeah.
So it's got that sort of established and historical look to it. And it speaks to me. You know, I would be the typical consumer, I believe, of your product because I like to cook at home. I love the branding. I love the story. And so it captured my eye when I saw it on the shelf.
Oh, I'm
and
so glad.
I actually saw it on the shelf just around the corner here in Richmond at the Fell Farmer.
Oh, yeah.
And, they've got it there. So yeah, I definitely noticed it. And yeah, it stands out. It's a beautiful piece of packaging.
I'm so glad. That's funny that you mentioned about it being a bit masculine.
Yeah.
That was on purpose because like a lot of guys, first of all, a lot of guys are chefs are guys. And then I always pictured it like basting steak and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I like, try to picture like a guy wanting to pick it up versus like some of my friends said, why don't you put Hunter? My son's name is Hunter. So they were like,
They're
like, why don't you put Hunter's caricature face? That I'm like, no, like that's like no guy's going to buy that. But I tried to make it actually as masculine as it could be.
Yeah.
just because I just like, I thought, you know, if guys can buy it, the moms will follow.
Yeah,
like,
100%.
Again, it's just, yeah.
So. It's interesting. Like when I was developing my brand, Black Honey Skincare, I created it with a masculine feel because my thought process was a male is going to always be attracted to a masculine brand. A female, they're very rarely going to use something in the shower that's got a feminine look and appeal to it. Yeah. Whereas a female will most likely pick up something that's masculine and be inclined to use it as well. So, yeah. You know, and I kind of feel the same way with Hunter Browns. Like it's naturally going to be something that, you know, it's just going to appeal to everybody with that masculine feel to it. So very, very smart choice. Yeah, it was a good one. I liked it.
Thank you so much.
No worries. Obviously, you put as much time and energy into your website and photography as well, which you sort of touched on before too. So has your website evolved over the time, or has it sort of stayed sort of where it is and fixed?
So it's stayed in terms of like the branding part. So it's still white, which I'm like fine with. it's still the same. But what has changed is that, like, I have recipes now. So before, it was really funny, actually, because I had, like, one recipe there. And it was, like, the brown butter spaghetti recipe, of course, because that's all I can make. But over time, like, I was able to get, like, again, these great chefs who are just so kind enough to share their recipe with me, who happen to take great photos. So I just asked them, like, and it's just recently, and it's just like I think over a year, like that I've seen all of these great photos and recipes to go with it. Right, so I asked them if I could just put it into my like recipe page, and of course credit them, and there's a story behind it. I'll like post it, and then they're like, and of course they were willing to, and so now I have an actual recipe page, which is like I think is like a little bit of a milestone for me, considering like none of my recipes are there. It's thankfully it's like from great chefs and like bakers and stuff. And so that is evolved, and so it's pretty active, and like I try to add every like couple of weeks or so.
Yeah.
And then as well as the news page, and I have a newsletter, so I try to like incorporate all of that in and stuff. So yeah, so in terms of the news and the recipes, that's always active, but the rest of the page is pretty much the same, and the stores and stuff, like whenever I use the store. But branding and stuff has actually been since before. So
very good. Tell us a little bit about your approach to marketing. Like you've already suggested that you're active on social media. You know, you've obviously got your beautiful packaging, which, you know, is highlighted on the retail shelf, but what are your other sort of approaches to getting the word out there and telling your consumers about it?
Yeah. So, I mean, I like, so when it started, it really was social media and Instagram that helped. And I was doing it all by myself. I did have someone help with social media at first, but then afterwards I kind of took over, because I'm a firm believer of like, you have to experience it for yourself to know what you want and don't want. And so I had someone do it, and then I kind of realized what I don't and don't want. And then, and so I basically just, so my, like, because there's a lot of product education needed, I used it again as a platform and portfolio. So a platform to show how the different ways to use my product and what is brown butter and stuff, and then a portfolio for the awards and nominations. So my like strategy was, once I had enough of that going on, and I use a lot of user generated content. So it's like people who have used my stuff, and I just like repost it or make a post that, or exactly. So it shows that, like, first of all, that we're vetted, that people like us, and that we like have good photos, and we're just active in the industry and active as a company. So I would use that, and I would direct message the stores that I want to be in. Mm-hmm. And I know it's just their social media manager, or not just, but like it's their social media manager. So I came in asking who their buyer was, and like saying we were nominated, like, look at our profile, like we're serious.
Yeah.
Would it be possible to get in touch with your buyer? And a lot of them are like willing to share who it is and send an email or forward it off. Mm. And then from there, I would just email the buyer, and then I would sell, like, I would go there and send them a sample and a sell sheet, and give them info, like in a short email and stuff. And then when we were lucky, we would get listed. And so, I did that for, I think, about like 17 stores, and, yeah, and it worked. And you just build off the leverage. Like, I'm here, but I'm not in this city.
Yes.
And then, yeah, so I used a lot of that. And every time we got a nomination, like not even just an award, but like a nomination, I would like add that. So I used anything and everything that I could as, yeah, leverage, and, yeah, any up-to-date info I would tell like the potential retailer. And I actually also email like our current retailers, like saying, oh, if you want to do a giveaway or if you want to do something. So I try to keep in contact with the marketing side of every store as, yeah, much as I can. So,
no, that's such, yeah, a smart approach. It's interesting, isn't it? Like, you've really leveraged your skills as a researcher and sort of getting out there and hustling, and it's so evident, and you've got such great energy about you.
Thank you.
And I think that that's definitely contributed to a lot of your success. So from what I can tell on your website, you're currently in 26 locations. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. So we are like, I think I got like 17 to 20 and then Dean's got the rest.
Right.
And then the brokers I've only started working them for like 2 to 3 months. Not,
oh,
not
right.
Long.
It's only early days.
Yeah, for sure. And, but again, like they are brokers, but they're much more than that. So then, yep, we're like building the foundation because it's, yes, scaling more than I initially thought it would.
Yeah.
I was ready to do that. Like, I was in it for the long haul to be like, oh, if I get into like another province in 5 years, that's great. Like, yep, it wasn't a side hustle, but, yes, it's also like I had realistic expectations considering I'm working two jobs. So,
right,
but now that I have people helping me, it's like we have to have the right foundation before we can move forward. And, mm-hmm, so I'm lucky that the brokers that I do have distribution experience, and that's not always common. It's not always exclusive that's the background. So we're like working on that. So, yeah. So Dean's is doing their part, but we're doing like this foundation part with the,
yes,
brokers, and then, yeah.
Very, yeah, good. And, yeah, so how far into the future are you looking, and how big are you sort of, how big are your goals that you're setting for yourself?
Oh, I want to go all over the world. I'm going to, no, I don't know. Like ideally, of course, we would be nationwide.
Yes.
Again, like I always foresaw it in like and a good thing would be like 5 to 7 years.
Yes.
But like hopefully it'll be less. And,
yes,
then like everyone, I think like we would love to go to the States. But
yeah.
But yeah, so I don't know.
Very good. And do you think that you'll have to change your approach and strategy to the way that you scale the business in production and working with your co-packer? Like do you know that they have capacity to be able to grow with you?
Yeah, so this one is a little bit smaller. Like, yeah, like totally fair to ask because they are smaller.
Yeah.
We have the opportunity, I guess, or access if we need a larger co-packer.
Yes.
So it might not be a forever thing, but at the same time, I love working with the same people.
Yep.
So it might just be an amount of working with you or excess,
yeah,
or different,
yes,
different markets, because if I go to different provinces, it might just require a different co-packer for there. And then,
yeah,
like, but we still have the people here. So
yeah, that's true. Yeah. Your success equals their success.
Yeah, for sure.
That's,
yeah,
cool. So from first engaging with Futurepreneur to, are you still working with them right now, or have you sort of finished things up there?
Yeah. It's so weird. I'm done my 2 years.
Is like, it 2 years?
Yeah,
I was wondering.
So, yeah. Okay. So the mentorship is 2 years. So that's kind of like how I remember it.
Okay.
But it doesn't feel like it. Like I still keep in touch with like one of the girls there, mm-hmm, and I like, whenever they need like a speaker or someone to do something for them, I'm always there. Like if I could be, I'm always there.
Yes.
And so yeah, so I'm done my time with them, but like I'll always be there when they need me.
Fantastic. Well, yeah, that's great. And I, you know, I guess the value in working along with the Futurepreneur group is the network that you created. So,
sure,
did you meet any other like minded business individuals and other people that are getting their businesses off the ground as well that are similar to yours?
Yeah. Like I've met so many people along the way. It's been really great. Who I like 100% know I wouldn't have met,
yeah,
if I didn't start the business, right? So,
yep,
yeah. Like I know, who do I know? Like, you know, Lindsay from Kindred Cultures. She is like, she makes kefir water.
Oh,
and
right.
She's,
is
also,
she based in Squamish, by the way?
No, she's actually based in Stevenson.
Oh,
so,
right.
Yeah.
I should get to know her.
Yeah, I know. We're all neighbors, really. Yeah. and then some of the others, and like there's a really great girl. Her name is Lindsay, and she owns Piquant Marketing. Mm-hmm. I think she actually does the marketing for someone you had on. Right. And like so she's vegan, but I love her marketing strategies and I love her newsletters. And because I'm butter and she's vegan, it doesn't align, but like it doesn't matter. Like she's so great and I have no hesitation to ask her for advice whenever. Yes. Like the community is so supportive.
Yeah.
There's one Kafka's Organic. She does pet food. Mm-hmm. And we kind of started at the same time. So we make sure to like have like a drink or whatever every month just to like catch up in the like growing pains or whatever.
Share but your frustrations nice. And yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and like the fact that we like started growing or started the business at the same time, it's really cool. So,
that is cool. Yeah, you can support each other in that respect. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's fantastic. Yeah. Listen, you've been so full of information. I really appreciate it. And your story is awesome. And I'm really excited to watch your business grow as well. If anybody wanted to try your product or get in touch with you, what's the best way?
I think like just going to our website and going to the retailers section, but also like we're available like via Legends Hall. So like delivery, if that's like more convenient these days.
Perfect.
And then, yeah. So at City Avenue Market and some other places. So, yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that sort of Legends Hall relationship, because they are just growing and getting more and more popular. Oh, and God, not only that, so but great. The whole sort of like direct to consumer business model through a distributor like a Legends Hall is becoming really popular, especially due to COVID. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about that. How did you get listed with Legends Hall?
Oh my God. It is. They're so great. Like I love them. So basically I reached out to them. I can't remember. I think I reached out to them kind of early on, but they were like, hey, can we get back to you? Because we're just about to move facilities. And I'm like, oh yeah, no worries and stuff. And then sure enough, they like after 2 or 3 months, they really did get back to me. And you know, you kind of take that as like, oh, that's okay. But like, you know, maybe next time. But they really did get back to me. And then like sure enough, post like on their new facility, which is like massive, I think, like when I remember seeing, like they really did move and they scaled quickly. Like they had to expand quickly. But so going in with them, like the onboarding was super great. The team is so nice. And then they're like super organized. And I like part of my thing again is like once I have a new store or retailer, I like reach out to the marketing manager to see if like there's anything we could do like together.
Like a little activation kind of thing.
Yeah. And she was so great. And we like talked on the phone, like it was very proactive. They have such great marketing and branding too. Mm. So she was so proactive and she's like, why don't like you, Hunter can make a video or you can make a video. And then they like put it and it was so great. And so they're just like totally on top of everything. And they're like always out there. And I love what they do. They get like some of the best stuff from the best restaurants.
Don't they?
Yeah. They have like a good, like niche in that way. Like it was a good thing, but
Very. Yeah, well, that's cool. Idea. Yeah. A lot of our clients here at Food Pack are listed with Legends Hall and, you know, Spud and BC Local Roots. And there are so many of those sort of options right now. And it's really cool to see. And it's opening up another revenue stream for these small businesses as well, which is really beneficial at this moment.
It is so good. Yeah. And so nice. And I feel like all of them are doing everything right. Like, you know,
I agree.
Yeah.
Well, listen, thank you so much for your time today. Everybody out there, I definitely recommend going to hunterbrowns.com, checking out Lana's beautiful website and products and having a look at the recipes as well, because they are such great looking recipes. And I'll be trying your brown butter pasta recipe as well over the weekend. I want to give it a crack. And I'll be picking myself up a bag from just around the corner at the Fowl Farmer. So thank you very much for your time. And I'd love to have you on again in the future and catch up on where the business is at.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're welcome. Anytime. Take care.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Thanks for listening today. If you have any questions from today's episode or would like to know more about what I can do to help you achieve your packaging vision, you can reach me directly at Hayden@thepackheavypodcast.com. You could DM me on Instagram @thepackheavypodcast, or we could also connect on LinkedIn and start a conversation there. I'll see you next week.